This is the AdNonTech Podcast, conversations about education, technology, and culture, with Dr. Doug Reed and Dr. Matt Stranick. Thank you for joining us.
My name is Dr. Doug Reed, and I am located in Abigwe, the traditional and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people.
My name is Dr. Matthew Stranick, and I am located in Manakwisk in St. John, New Brunswick, which is situated on the traditional and unceded territory of the Wolastoqiyik Maliseet people. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 53 of the AdNonTech podcast. With me, as ever, the inestimable Dr. Doug Reed and myself, Dr. Matt Stranick. In this case, among the forest creatures having a tea party this Saturday morning, because I myself am having tea in this mug, and so hence we're just having a tea party up in here, basically. AI generated, but I almost think that goes without saying at this point. That's pretty representative of the weekend so far for me, Doug. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. And one thing I really enjoy is every time you do this intro, you put a different word in front of my name, and I'm always very tickled by whatever the word is.
Well, okay. First of all, I appreciate your appreciation, but second of all, it's been actually the inestimable Dr. Doug Reed for a little while now, going on a few weeks, but there were some trial and error going on before that, to be sure.
Well, I'm very happy with it. I think
good man. Awesome. It's not meant to make you sad, my dude. So I think actually this episode is somewhat of a direct or even indirect sort of sequel to episode we did not that long ago, episode 50, the celebration episode, celebrating of success. Now, I pointed this out to you, Doug, and I was just like, okay, so we're doing another one. I wasn't sure if you had something different in mind, but then I checked the title in the Word or in the Google Doc just this morning, and I see that it's now been sort of repurposed a bit. We're taking it in a different direction a bit there, pal. So would you like to maybe just speak to that a bit, sir?
Sure. Our episode today is about understated successes, techniques, and technology, and how that impacts education and ed tech. And I didn't realize what I was doing when I started. Do you ever do that? Do you ever go down that rabbit hole to say, I really want to do something like this? And there was a bunch of flashbacks where it's like, oh yeah, I've seen that article recently. But the understated part is where I wanted to go.
Well, there we go. There we be, right? So that's a nice distinction. And your point about rabbit holes, I mean, literally my doctoral stuff and practice, and then a lot of my even master's level stuff has been about various teaching permutations on the internet. So, I mean, rabbit holes upon rabbit holes, literally. Don't see any rabbits back here, but they're chilling in their holes, right? It's implied.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man, totally. So I appreciate the new tack with this episode. Was there anything you wanted to get into before we started talking about Alberini 2007?
How about we skip the weather this time and we can just jump right in? We'll do the weather again next week.
Well, okay. I mean, only to the extent that I stepped out on my patio and had a tobacco cigarette, as I sometimes do, And today was like t-shirt weather. Like I didn't have to throw on a jacket. I didn't have to. It's just, it's gray. It's not too much color up there, but it's like, I don't know. We've had like a piss pot's worth of rain and then some for a couple of days running. And now it's just kind of like, I guess we got, we're all rained out for now. So it's like, I don't know, 12 degrees or something. It was t-shirt weather on the smoking patio, you know. So not that I'm condoning smoking, children or adults or anybody else. Don't follow my example. I hope that has been clear at the outset of this podcasting endeavor, honestly. So anyway, Doug, since you mentioned the weather.
Yeah, that makes me laugh because this is Maritimers not talking about the weather. And we still did it for 2 or 3 minutes.
we have if we could be doing like a sub podcast, like the Ed non-weather podcast, right? And then yeah, it would just be we can record 30 minutes of ourselves before the real episodes just talking about the weather, and then cut it out with Camtasia, and then just kind of give it its own sort of format, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Good Lord, Doug.
That could be a parallel podcast to the Ed Non-Tech Conversations podcast.
the Ed Non-Tech Weather, the Ed Non-Weather podcast, I think that's viable, Doug, as if this thing isn't like eating my life with respect to the podcast, but it's kind of eating my life outside of anything that isn't work, really, or sleep at this point. So don't know if I got even more bandwidth for it than I already do. And if I'm being real honest, I'm hoping to downplay the bandwidth a bit going forward. But that's maybe for the further discussion down the stretch. So really, Doug, Alberini 2007, what do you say, man?
Just to give it a little preface, the real reason I picked this is with the depth and complexity of what educators do. And so much of what we do gets understated. It's of course the teachers figured it out. Of course the profs figured it out. Of course we just rolled with that success. And I there was a meme years ago, I didn't want to bring up COVID again, but there was a meme about teachers and how they adapted to COVID. And education was really the only sector of society that didn't need a bailout or didn't have people banging pots to say thank you so much. And educators just figured out a way through as best they could. Right. It wasn't the banking industry holding their hands out saying, give us more, the oil patch saying, give us more. Educators just figured out there was more money there. And I'm sure every educator that was impacted by it was thankful. I certainly was. I got hired to do some work from some kind of government grant to say, yeah, we need more online educators now. So that money was there for a bit. So I was very thankful. But the Alberini 2007 article is about the crisis of ed tech and reinventing education more than anything else. And with reinventing, oftentimes that means throw the baby out with the bathwater and start fresh. And I don't think education has really done that, right? Like they talk about the conceptual shift in emphasis and the tangible barriers and all that things. But really, it's the conflicts within education. It's deciding what's important and why it's important and how do we get there. And so it's more of a very, very incremental change kind of shift, which is less impact. When you were young, I think we've had this conversation before about calculators. Were you of the generation where you weren't allowed to use a calculator in grade 4, like that kind of thing? Or was it you weren't allowed to use a calculator or a computer?
I think they brought out, like, we're talking math class. So you're talking about something that I'm not going to be, like, oh, I was super into that, and I was super good at that, and I have strong memories about it. But I do seem to remember mid-80s, they would bring out these little plastic trays which had calculators, and you use the calculator for certain workbook, whatever, activities in the class. And then you put them back, gave them back to the teacher, and they went in the cubby with the where the calculators were stored. So we didn't have, like, our personal devices. We didn't have to bring them in necessarily. Probably in high school, I was doing as little math as I could to graduate in high school. So even if they told me to bring a calculator, I was skipping class so much that I may have even missed that. So anyway, bit of a digression there, dude.
No, but it's the difference in our age, because when I was at that age, it was like, no, calculators are bad. They're going to ruin everything. It's like when Plato said, don't write stuff down because that'll ruin your brain. So you won't have to remember it. So it was an incremental change. The world did not come to an end when calculators were allowed in class, and now they're mandated in some classes. You have to have that very particular, like, TI, whatever that Texas Instruments calculator is, to do all the calculations and
functions.
Stuff. Yes.
Functions, calculator with functions, things that can do vectors. I got, like, as far as, like, basic trigonometry, where it's like, okay, I get this, I see, you know, and then beyond that, what attention that I even had for school, which was not much at all, but was, like, good, was pretty much squarely on the language and social studies areas, which has persisted in various ways ever since. In terms of, like, what a technological intervention for language is, taking a while to catch up with the calculator, but boy, have we ever with ye old ChatGPT. My goodness. My goodness. Anyways, dude, was there anything else you wanted to say about that particular one before we move to the next?
Yeah, just a little bit. They also mentioned about identifying theoretical assumptions in education and how ed tech rolls with that. And we seem to have a history of very small changes, right? And it takes a long time. It takes the 10 years or 15 years for everybody to get on board with it, other than when COVID happened. COVID sped everything up because everything changed. So we're getting there, and it's all understated. Like, 10 years earlier, the world's coming to an end if there's a calculator. 10 years later, it's like, yeah, okay, here's your class set of calculators. 10 years after that, you must have a calculator, right? If they had tried to mandate that 20 years sooner, there would have been blood on the streets, right? It's like, oh, no, the world's coming to an end. Yeah, the knives would have been out in those staff meetings. Their talk radio would have gone crazy with, can you believe what these young ones are doing now? Anyway, that's the extent of.
It's good. It's good. Those are some key observations there. Particularly, I was thinking a bit about Rogers' diffusion of innovations, as you kind of said. So, like, for sure, there may have been those educators on the bleeding edge of the calculator, you know, thing, who was like, I'm going to buy these out of my own personal money and bring them into my class. But the timing is everything. And in the same way that I just don't see, like, virtual reality as taken off in education anytime, like, significantly soon, or the fact that AI has largely now, at least for me, I'm just like, you just mean regular work. You just mean, like, a regular resource for work with these AI applications. It's just something that's kind of like, okay. So I just, every one of these has their own, like, the precedent has been set by everything that preceded it, right? So it's just like how quick, and we as a culture, as a society, have become more adept at handling these, you know, change, levels of change. Because, I mean, we're the generation that's gone from, like, you know, basic television to the internet to the internet everywhere, like within a span of 30 years. And it's just because change tends to be incremental, but also exponential. I think you could make the case for it where it's just the snowball effect. Well, we got so used to, you know, going from just TV to recordable TV that everything that came after that just was built on the preceding assumptions, the preceding sets. And so just by efficiency of process, basically it just gets faster and faster and faster. So I don't know what the next paradigm is, but it'll be here before we know it, I'm sure. So and, some good thoughts there, dude.
And there's going to be some dead ends. We're going to run into dead ends. I remember the VHS versus Beta.
I was literally thinking that, yes. Yeah. Betamax. That's right.
And then the next one. What were those? The video discs? Like the big records that were like...
Oh, yes. Shiny? Yeah, they were... Yeah, I know what you mean. Like laser discs, I think they were called.
Laser discs, yes.
Yeah. That's another also-ran format. People of my generation, those of you who are out there, you may recall, like, you know, Sega Genesis not getting the same level of traction as Super Nintendo, you know, when they went to the 16-bit consoles. So, yeah, man.
Along that same line, sometimes things get heavily invested with a particular technology. I was listening to the podcast Patented or Patented, whatever it is. And I love that podcast. They pick one little topic and they talk about it with an expert. And there was a big study done in the mid 80s about some kind of census genealogy thing. And it was all done on Laserdisc because that was the thing. And then they tried to get back to the data. They could. Apparently in the UK, there was like two working Laserdisc machines left. And they had to figure out how to put all the information they had on that and extract it somehow to get it out. And that was a big, long process to get it out of that proprietary format.
Archival recovery. Those are some understated heroes, people who specialize in those fields. That's for sure. Yeah. So now you got a pretty nifty table for this Wagner, Hosseinin, and Head 2008.
Yeah. And it's about who's responsible for e-learning success. And one thing that I found fantastic is they had a comment about everything's dependent on the needs and concerns of the stakeholders group. And the stakeholders group changes, right? The stakeholders group when I was in grade 5 or grade 10 is different than the stakeholder group when you were in grade 5 or grade 10. And we were close, like we were in different provinces, but if you go to a different country, that stakeholders group would change again. And making that distinction mattered. But what I really love is this little table that they created. It's a table about the dimensions of e-learning. And this is the understated part for me, right? They're talking about the different dimensions like synchronicity, location, independence, and mode. This is so understated. Like, they can put in a chart. This is, 16 years ago. Okay, here's how we do asynchronous. Here's how we do synchronous. Well, 20 years before, that wasn't even an option. And of course we do it now. It's just, of course we figured that out. Or the location, same place you distribute. What do you mean? Distributed before was put a book in the mail? That is... Yeah, we can go back to correspondence from whatever, 150 years ago in the UK, or go back to those letters that people used to send back and forth to themselves 200 or 300 years ago. But everything they mention here is all stuff that we just, that's humdrum. Of course we do that. and we're so subtle about it. And then they even have examples, and they have the meanings. It's a wonderful, tidy little chart to say, look how we've just accepted this and rolled with it.
Yeah, no, it's as good and clear an expression of basic e-learning nomenclature as you could find prior to the pivot, I mean, so to speak. Yeah. So that's, again, I think on this show we've been pretty consistent about our desire for clear terminology, conceptual clarity. Clear terminology leads to clear thinking, one could argue, and we do. So kudos on the table, my dude. That's quite a good one.
Yeah, Wagner et al. Yeah. I really love this table because it was just, look where we're at. And it was kind of humdrum the way they presented it. Because even the mode, electronically only or blended, 10 years earlier, that's not an option. 10 years earlier, we kind of had some blended, sort of, kind of, with these LMSs that people had just started to hack together. But electronically only really didn't exist. So it's just, I want to bring out the understated to say, here's how far we come. EdTech is a thing. And we educators figured it out. We figured out how to make it work somehow.
Quite a significant body of practice hacked away at by individuals, institutions, organizations. I mean, it was sort of one of those things where it's like going back to our pal who invented the printing press, right?
Yep.
The Gutenberg, right? It's like, how many variations of the printing press were in work around the time? I mean, when an innovation's time is ready to go, it just seems that there'll just be one. It's almost like the person who brings it into existence, the individual, is just almost like an afterthought. The innovation being hacked away at by various, you know, that's what made Oppenheimer an interesting film, is just because that's what made the tension. It's like, you know, the whole, whatever Axis countries are getting closer to it, they're working on it. So it was just, that bomb was going to get built by somebody. The printing press was going to get built by somebody. So with any of these innovations in ed tech and whatnot, it's like, well, of course these things were going to emerge. So it's just through the flows and ebbs of culture, based just on contemporary culture, being as electronically mediated as we are in all aspects of entertainment, recreation, personal relationships, finance, and everything else. Why would education be different from that, honestly, in terms of orientation and positioning towards a preponderance of increasingly online technology, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
For me, with Gutenberg, I'm pretty sure that other parts of the world already had a type of printing press.
Right.
Before Gutenberg, but he had it in the right place at the right time with the right impact. And how
white-skinned European? There we go. Yeah.
So. And we're both kind of white-skinned European stock from.
my company here ain't, but me squarely. Yeah.
Well, your company behind you, all those little animals, they look like a very Beatrix Potter kind of UK.
What I literally put into the prompt was forest animals having a tea party in the forest. And this is what it came back with, which, okay.
Okay.
It's definitely a certain aesthetic, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
Now, with the printing press, coming back to that for two more seconds.
Sure.
I don't believe that was ever intended to be an educational tool. I believe that that was designed to publish books and publish parchments and publish pamphlets and make it easier to get that out there. But I don't think organized education was really in that picture to start off, unless they were just printing versions of the Bible.
I think education occupied such a different area within society back in the day, owned significantly, largely by the church. The holders of the keys to literacy, right? The holders of knowledge as it was being disseminated in whatever format. So your point is well taken. I'm no historian on the era, but I have to think that education was just such a drastically different thing. So this is where, you know, it's like, well, they didn't come up with the internet thinking of education, but of course, education is going to keep up. And that's one of those things where, like, anybody even in the helping professions, I mean, that was one of my thoughts when you started talking about this, like, all the stuff that educators just do on a regular basis. Well, you could also really kind of make the same case for first responders.
Yeah.
You could make a case for social workers. You could make the case for nurses or doctors in a lot of situations. It's just the improvisation that goes into having to navigate things every day, new situations within specific frameworks that are imposed by the larger culture, i.e. a new technological paradigm. You make it work, and eventually the practice just becomes bundled and aggregated into a more specific, you know, thing that you can quantify and make tangible and further enable practice down the stretch, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, man.
Yeah. If we didn't have Ed in our title, then absolutely I would have cast the net wider, but I just want to stick to education for right now. But yeah, totally. Your points were all fantastic. Now there's a Weller article which okay. I found really interesting because it was done in 2018 and it's 20 years of ed tech. I believe ed tech was going a heck of a lot longer than 20 years, but for whatever reason, Weller stuck it at 20. And it was just before the pandemic, just before the pivot. So for me, I look at it and I look back kind of like you look back when it was young and wasn't life better then? It was like a cheery optimism to this article that I really enjoyed before the pandemic happened.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, first of all, Martin Weller, for those who might not know, a very highly regarded practitioner, professor, researcher, associated with the Open University in the UK. Going back, I'm pretty sure he's been there since the 70s, but I
might be there a long time. Yeah,
long time. And actually, the 20 years of ed tech, that is that the article from EDUCAUSE. I mean, he also wrote a book called 20 Years of Ed Tech, which I assume is in parallel with that article or what have you. And actually, I was one of the reviewers for Athabasca Press during my time at Thompson Rivers. Nobody cared that I did that, but it was something that I got to do that was kind of cool. I was one of the peer reviewers or whatever. So it was cool. It's a good book. It's easily readable. And I think to speak to your point, 20 years sort of seem like a good frame. I think 20 years is just sort of like, you know, if you're trying to get it to a wider readership, but then also it was sort of Weller himself taking stock of things that he has observed within his pretty significantly long and substantial career. So it's sort of like he can speak to it from his lived experience. I think that's part of what the tack, that's one of the tacks that the book is trying to take. But no, it's cool. I mean, it's one of those, like, I could read this almost recreationally and almost with no actual knowledge of the field and totally take something away from it where I didn't feel like I was being talked down to or inundated with just obscure references and whatnot. So quite immensely readable, which isn't always a given in our field, my dude.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought this was like beautifully written. It was to the point without choking people with jargon and stuff. And I like everything you read or everything you write. So that's
totally. Shout out to you, sir. I'll tag you on the LinkedIn post.
But throughout these 50 odd episodes we've done, you have mentioned several times, wow, look, I learned something new about you every time. I did not know that you were one of on that editorial group with Athabasca. So that is really cool. I love that type of stuff.
I have such mixed feelings, dude, about my whole time there. I'm just like, I was doing, on the one hand, it's like I did these cool things and I got to meet these cool people and really, you know, do a lot of things that I consider valuable, to the point that obviously even this week, just a few days back, I actually recorded a full solo lecture for TRU at the behest of an excellent colleague who's there. So I still have people who I care about a lot that work there. But I mean, like the open learning department, dude, when I was there, it did not take me long to feel like I was operating under a cloud and that I was regarded as a nuisance and that they were not interested in helping me be the sort of person in the faculty that they wanted. You know, it just really, when I didn't figure it out by myself within a pretty short amount of time, it was just became like, well, this guy's a liability. That's really what I felt like I was under for most of the 4 years I was there. So it's like, to speak to this cool experience, like, yeah, and I got to kind of, you know, help shape a little bit this book that is pretty awesome. There's a basis for a podcast, you know, the 20 Years of EdTech podcast through the Open EdTech Co-op, which I have been blocked and banned from. I've been banned from a thing called the Open EdTech Co-op. Like, my IP address has been blocked. Like, awesome. So it's just such a confounding sort of feeling of like, you know, like just, it tests my ability to put it into words, but I know that it's, the Germans have a word for it, like Guggenheim, you know, like two or three things kind of jammed into four syllables and six umlauts. Anyway, dude. Rants, I got them. It's the it's the tea, you know.
I get it, but it's cool for me because I've had. Hey, I was in a different branch.
I know.
That same floor.
You don't need to. I did, but you don't need to, dude. It's fine.
No. And I don't mean it that way. It's cool that there's cool stuff you can look back on now.
Totally.
And say, that was cool. And this wouldn't happen without it, even though it
Well,
did.
Like the WordPress tattoo.
Yeah.
The WordPress tattoo. It's like, I had to admit in that lecture for Dr. Gurney's class this past week, I mean, it was about just curriculum, straight up, curriculum and teaching, basically, with a emphasis on IT and whatnot. And I had to admit, just speaking to my experience with it, that I was not doing things with WordPress even a bit, really, before coming to TRU. So that was something where, I mean, even though my experience with open learning was like a gong show in so many ways, but I came out of it kind of almost more determined than ever to have, like, this podcast and whatever has come from it that was going to be the basis for it. And, you know, my educational consulting deal, whatever, 506 Consulting, which has actually led to a few different types of work for Thompson Rivers, actually. It's just, you know, so like, it's like nothing is like dichotomies. Anything that breaks things down, it's this or it's this, tends to be pretty unsubtle. So I guess I count myself lucky to have had such a weird experience that I'm still kind of wrestling with financially and in terms of being away from my kids. But still, it's just, I'm in a fully formed rant and I'm looking for a way out, dude.
Okay. Do we want to save I'm going to jump to the Weller? Yeah. I'm going to jump to the Weller comments. And Weller mentions that a fundamental shift has taken place driven by ed tech and technology adoption.
Yep.
The part I love about the statement is that at the same time, nothing much has changed. So isn't that good? I see that as a positive thing because I see our role is to help students learn, help put them on a path to whatever their future life is going to be. And for the most part, we've stuck to it. Some ed tech stuff hasn't worked and we did a whole episode on debacles. So I'm not going to go there, but we've continuing on with how do we improve things? And we've reached out to more because e-learning, holy moly, like we get to reach out to people in different places and they're getting opportunities they didn't have before. So isn't that wonderful? I'm here to see the good side.
Yeah. And I think, again, just having, you know, these conversations, right, where with Lee and Kara and Hassan and Kathleen so far, I think just like the fact that e-learning is a factor for each of these individuals in their own settings. They all got wildly different settings. And while we didn't necessarily talk a whole lot about ed tech in some of those conversations, I mean, still, it's one of those things that just anybody who's operating in any kind of educational role whatsoever, it's something you got to contend with. So you can do that from a position of having sort of consistency in your concepts, informing consistency of practice, which leads to a more robust quality assurance process on your thing. Or you can just kind of improvise the shit out of everything and you're going to get some good results. You're going to get lucky occasionally, but wouldn't it be better to have some organizing principles? Wouldn't it be good to just have some clear terminology? Because thoughts, as we express them, are made up of language. And if you don't have clear language, then anything you express is going to be imperfect in its expression by definition, right? Less coherent, less organized, whatever. So I really appreciate anything that's got a consistent, you know, set of things with its terms in terms of how they're applied. It's a supporting educational conceptual structure, if you will, informing the thing, which is also something I get from Weller's stuff, just because he's been so immersed in it for so long. So are we ready to speak to Rodrigue Seguero, 2022?
Yes.
Okay, folks, Camtasia will see us through this particular thing, but we did have a case of the sometimes irregular maritime internet. So we'll just dial her back to Rodrigo Seguero, 2022, which Doug was preparing to delineate for us.
Yeah, EdTech in Developing Countries from 22. And there was a wonderful statement about EdTech starting to play a role in the education of millions of children in developing countries. And I think that is a massive understatement. With the pandemic pivot, I know it was way more than that. I don't think it's millions and millions. I think it's hundreds of millions. aiming towards a billion globally. I have no backup for those numbers, but I can count how many schools got closed and how many kids had to start doing stuff online.
Well, first of all, I think that's an absolutely vital point that you identified here. And to speak to education in developing countries, I mean, with regards to EdTech, I think UNESCO, the United Nations agency, has a lot to do with that. And one of the reasons I say that is because a lot of their education programming for that organization, actually, they did adopt the MOOC format, free open educational courses, essentially, for countries, you know, like South Asia countries. So, you know, for like farming practices for those in certain of those countries, or water treatment or whatever. I mean, I'm not obviously naming specific programs, but I mean, that's the kind of content that appears on those courses. And so like the UNESCO thing on LinkedIn is actually really worth following, because again, these are people who are now spending a lot of time talking about AI and how those applications are going to work with education globally. And again, including the so-called global South, right? The so-called countries that are not part of the richest 8 or 12 or 20 countries on planet Earth. In this case, the maritime internet is really putting us through the gears. We're going to see how long we can maintain this. I think in the interests of testing our luck more advantageously, we should really just jump into that final article, Doug, if we may, and then get into sort of the closing down elements of the show.
Sure.
Okay.
So Rodriguez Segura talks about EdTech in developing countries, and they mention that EdTech's playing a role in the lives of millions of children in developing countries. Since the pandemic, I think that's closer to hundreds of millions with the number of kids. So that's all I wanted to point out, that we don't even notice or mention that millions upon tens of millions upon hundreds of millions of children are being affected by EdTech. It's just kind of the shoulder shrug. And we just keep doing the shoulder shrug with the successes that we've been having.
So if I may, Doug, are you sort of suggesting we should be more upfront about what we're doing? Like, I don't know, kick up our elbows like lawyers or something? Like, hey, we're the educators. Higher salaries, better working conditions for all. Come on, people.
And more research positions in post-secondary. Because the number of faculties that say, oh, no, we know how to plug the computer into the display screen in the lab, so we know EdTech. And it's like, no, you know how to do one technical thing, or you know how to put your grades in Moodle. That is not EdTech. That is such a small piece. But it's like, oh, yeah, it's just an assumption. Well, of course you know how to do it.
It's a whole set of practices, knowledges, concepts, and skills that are affecting the practice and the conditions for practice, whether you are aware of them or not. So if you can be aware of them, why wouldn't you, right? That's one of the things we're here for, folks, to try and help unpack that with you, even as much as we're trying to unpack it ourselves in our own setting, right? Transparency. Yeah man. So
we need better PR. We just need better PR in our field.
Said every teacher in every classroom ever, like back around the primeval campfire, they were just like, shouldn't this person be getting preferable, you know, hides and meat, given what they do for the wider community in the Paleolithic something? Whew. Dude, I'm running on fumes. My tea is almost empty here. You got a nice list here, though, of some good successes. Did you want to speak to that a little bit, bud?
The big picture on EdTech successes is basically whatever educators can adapt that already exists in society. That is basically what educators have been doing kind of forever, right? Like, what do we got to work with? Okay, how do we get these people to learn? Let's roll. So when it comes to collaboration, the pandemic pivot, like online professional development, blended hybrid learning, like all of these things are based in now in education, are based in EdTech and how EdTech has helped with things. It's, can you imagine doing student-focused learning without the EdTech devices that educators have taken and started to use, or the EdTech techniques? I just don't see how it could have possibly happened.
Well, for me, I think, first of all, you're absolutely correct. And then I would also sort of go back to something I mentioned earlier, just like so much of our activity now as a society is mediated through the internet and the web and all the attendant technologies and cultures which support that. Again, we can be aware of them or not. I tend to think it's more helpful to be aware of them if you can, in as much as we're all influenced by these factors. So I just think, it's incumbent upon education to try and elevate its practice in as much as other societies of work and society generally, other sectors of it, are doing in such a media-rich, embedded context that we are in with the cultures that are emerging and continue to emerge online, basically.
Yeah. Totally. I completely agree. So rather than just a concept, there's also products.
Yep.
And I don't believe too many of these products or practices or techniques or whatever category you want to put them in were really developed for it with education in mind, right? Like learning management systems, okay. And MOOCs, okay. The rest, right? Paper, radio, TV, internet, wikis, blogs, handheld devices, word processing, spreadsheets, presentation software, all that stuff has been adapted by educators to make them work. It's right. How can we do this? How do we help? And I even included virtual reality because there was some really cool stuff like with Pokemon Go and how to use QR codes in a class to do like scavenger hunts to force people to go all over campus and find stuff. There have been some successes. Okay, it was a fad, but I expect virtual reality to come back, especially the way the big boys, the Apples and Facebooks and stuff, have each pumped out virtual reality hardware again.
I would say that reminds me of the distinction between augmented reality and virtual reality, because I think when we're talking like just sort of doing things with apps and, you know, camera features on your phone, that kind of mobile-based functionality I typically associate with augmented reality, m-learning as well. What I think virtual reality, and this may be just me, but I tend to think of like, you know, the headsets, right? The haptic gear, the that kind of fully immersive thing, which, as you quite rightly pointed out, that's like Meta, right? The Facebook company Meta, they have done a ton to try and get that going, where like it's a metaverse, right? That's what they refer to their virtual reality programming as. And basically you go in with a fully sensorily active dynamic avatar. Okay, everyone, we have encountered some significant challenges with the maritime internet. Maybe it's the PEI internet, I'm not sure. But we tried 3 times just to get the last bit of the episode done together, and it didn't quite work. So and the interests of improvising a format on the fly, what we're going to do, what we are doing, is I'm going to record my version of the last couple minutes of the episode, and then Doug is going to record his, and we're going to close out the episode that way, because it would just be sitting there partially done otherwise, and we just wouldn't be optimal. So to then go to the Google document where I'm looking at the things that Doug has kind of prepped and shared with me for placing in the WordPress, there's a lot of really nifty visuals here, as always. Some pretty good photographs, some pretty good memes, and even some early advertising for Apple products, like really back in the day. Interesting price point, Apple, with their $666.66 Apple One with 4K, 4,000 bytes of RAM. Wow. Well, I'm not going to be speaking further to the images because that really is more of Doug's department. But scrolling through here, scrolling on down through these awesome visuals, word of the podcast, understated. I don't know how understated we are on this show. Maybe we are. Critters of the AI forest? They're not saying much. Understated. Yeah, let's just leave it at that. Understated. We'll understate the understatedness. Question of the podcast, how can we stay optimistic with technology, change, and education and not get cynical? Excellent question from the inestimable Dr. Doug Reed. Again, I sort of would tend to think that as long as you enjoy and care about what you're doing as an educator, first and foremost, then to me, that's going to inform how you approach the technology aspect of it. If you're going into your career, into your job with a perspective of openness and curiosity and wanting to engage with other people, and make the world a better place in that way, then I think whatever you're looking to do with technology, successes and failures and whatnot, it's going to be from a pretty good mental perspective, hence cynicism. I actually think that cynicism is an excellent and valid philosophical standpoint, but recognizing here what Doug was trying to get at. You don't want to get jaded. You don't want to get, you don't want things to eat at your soul or whatever in terms of this stuff. And phrase of the podcast, maritime internet is putting us through the gears. I think I may have said that. Thanks for that, Doug. It is. It was. That's the phrase of the podcast. And that kind of brings us to the end of it, to the end of my end of it. I've asked Doug to do one of these videos himself. He volunteered for that. And he's going to share that with me, probably through Google Drive. And then I'm going to download it onto the Camtasia, the media editor that I use. And we'll close out the weekend that way. It's Saturday. My tea is just about gone. Just tiny little fractional amount left here. So thanks to everybody who's checking this out for any reason whatsoever. And thanks to the inestimable Dr. Doug Reed, as ever, for being such an excellent colleague and co-host. Take care, everybody, and bye for now.
Because the maritime internet is giving us the gears, we're going to try a very different thing for wrapping up. One of the images that I really want to share, and there's a bunch there for the listeners to take a look at if you go to our webpage, is a bunch of images. And there's one with, it's a Philips ad with Darth Vader plugging something into his lightsaber. And the tagline is, let's make things better. And I honestly believe that's what ed tech professionals do and what educators in general do. It's how do we take something and just try to make it better? There's some other there that tickled me, made me laugh. But I really want to get to the word, question, and phrase of the podcast. The word of the podcast for me is understated. We talked about that a lot, and it's how we just accept so many things that are working now and they just become our norm. The question of the podcast is how can we stay optimistic with technology change in education and not get cynical? Because I know sometimes I just get cynical with, oh, that didn't work. Oh, no, what's going on? Or what do you mean I have to have that battle with the person that controls the money again? And the phrase of the podcast is maritime internet is putting us through the gears. And I know that's not really a topic of it, but my internet collapsed on me at least 4 times during this podcast. So thank you to Matt for stitching all this together. And I look forward to talking to you next time. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye.